Welcome to The New Exchange, a podcast series that explores how everyone has a story to tell. My name is Kent Grandpierre, and this first bonus episode of the season is with an unbelievably talented human being, the one and only Danae Moore. Danae is a British-Jamaican musician and a cook based in the UK that's been making a name for herself both in the music world and the culinary world, all while fiercely being herself. Last year, Danae published her first cookbook, Plentiful, Vegan Jamaican Recipes to Repeat. There's so many incredible things about this book, from the design to the photography, but obviously the most important thing, the recipes within it. One of the most special things about the book is that the recipes were designed with ease in mind for the reader, for the person who's going to be preparing meals. And yeah, it has such a unique approach to a cookbook, which we discuss at length within this episode. Big ups to Danae for really figuring out a space in the market. I think I even say it in the podcast, it's so crazy to think like a book like this didn't exist prior to her making it. The genesis of the book came from Danae's forays into social media with Dee's Table, her Instagram page where she'd share her approach to cooking and the passion that she has for food. That passion is rooted in her Jamaican heritage and the fact that Danae spent her entire life exploring creativity to discover who she is and what she wants to say. In some ways, this interview is in two parts, where the first part is about her music and the incredible album that she put out in 2020 called Modern Dread, and the second part is about the cookbook. With Modern Dread, Danae cemented herself as a creative force that not only wants to grow, but to branch out into as many areas as possible, especially sonically. It's an album you listen to and think, this person wants to kick down all the doors that are in their way. And with our chat about the book, beyond talking about the food, we also talk about the logistics behind even bringing a cookbook to life. What does it take to make a project like that into a tangible thing that you can hold in your hands? Remember, Danae's cookbook Plentiful is out now. If you're in the UK, you can purchase it at most major booksellers. And if you're outside of the UK, don't worry, you can indeed order the book via Amazon. This is The New Exchange with Danae Moore. Enjoy. Man, it is a pure joy getting to chat with you again. We, right before we hit the recorder, we did nail that the last time we met was way back in 2015. And when you think about it, man, like, life has changed so much for you since then, yeah?
Life has more than changed. I feel like that version of me, like, I see photographs and it just blows my mind how much I've done. I feel like sometimes you don't really realize how much time has gone by because, like, you're constantly like, okay, what next, what next? Well, at least I am. I'm like, what next thing. And yeah, so that would have been New York, freshly maybe released my debut album, like 6 months. I say freshly, it would have been like 6 months after or something like that, or nine months for my time. But yeah, a while ago. It's wild, especially because I captured a lot of my life, or I try my best to capture a lot of my life on film. That's like one of my favorite things to do. I count myself as a novice, so I'm definitely not in it to, I don't know, it's like really important to capture moments, especially on something that's like tangible that you develop and you have. So I feel like when I look back at film photos, that's kind of when I get that moment.
Well, in the context of the things we're going to be talking about, while I was like forming these questions, it kind of hit me that so many of the things we're going to talk kind of reflect on feelings and reflecting on feelings in a way. So I guess the best way to start in that regard is, how am I finding you today? Like, how are things?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I feel like, so I wear many hats. I do lots of different things. And so the days kind of switched for me. So I've been writing a lot, which has been really great. I've been working on, I guess, I want to say a body of work, but really it's since Modern Dread came out 2020, I've been like slowly writing and figuring out what I want to say next. And it's been really nice to actually have the space to, and time to be able to do that at my own pace. So that's been really good. It feels good to make music again and see myself in newer sounds.
Wow. I really love hearing that, especially because in all honesty, like when this iteration of the podcast was born, it kind of like was like either slowly before, slowly after Modern Dread came out. So funny enough, I've been dying to chat with you about, dying to chat with you in general ever since that project came out, because when I reflect on that album, it feels like a piece of work that very much needed to happen for you, that it needed to be expelled from you. And I wonder, when you hear that, like when you receive those words, how much does that speak to you? Like, what do you feel it is, the vitality that we hear in that album?
For me, there's always a sense of urgency, and Modern Dread was me not being afraid. I feel like I don't fear things in the studio, which is why I like it. It's a space that I love because there, for me, it feels like a space where I can challenge myself. And it's kind of like a really strange process. Like sometimes I think about it, you know, as a songwriter, I'm alone a lot. And in the process of making a record, you're kind of working with a handful of people. But for me, Modern Dread had this urgency for many reasons. I was being challenged big time. It was a big shift for me sonically. But I think it's the record I've always wanted to make. And I felt like I had the best time making it. Like genuinely, that challenge, I love it. I love that healthy challenge of, you know, figuring things out and allowing the moments to be a song. And in on the record, there were some songs, like for instance, Honor. If you heard the demo, it sounds so different than how it does on the album, because I just wrote it on guitar. It's just a guitar vocal. That and Don't Close the Door, actually, they're both, I just wrote them just on guitar and vocals. And I guess the production part of it, it always felt like it needed more. And there's something really nice about, like, you have to figure that out. And you go on this chase and you try a few things and you just have to follow what feels the most exciting in that moment. And to me, it was an exciting record to make because I was following that moment and just going with it.
Yeah. You know, something I am very excited about getting to bring up in regards to the album as a whole, and thank you for like exploring it with me, because I've been, you know, again, dying to chat with you about it, is that we have a mutual friend that was part of the creation of it, Alex of Everything Everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love that guy. And what's so crazy to me about how the album is, I can hear the collaboration aspect of you and him working together, where I feel like sometimes when people work on albums, they could have too much of their fingerprints on it. But I could tell it was like based off conversations and very much like trying to reflect where you were at and what you were going through. Is there an experience from working with Alex that you're particularly like fond of? If you can, maybe you could paint a scene for us. Like,
yeah, I think Alex challenged me in a way that I haven't been challenged before. Also, I'm a massive Everything Everything fan. I say they're like easily one of my favorite UK bands. And I always loved how I felt like, I'll never forget listening to Cough Cough for the first time.
Same.
I mean, like, what is this? I've never heard a piece of music like this.
Wow.
And that whole record had such a massive impact on me. So I was always eager to work with someone like that. I like to be pushed. I like for someone to put me in that uncomfortable place where I'm like out of my comfort zone. And I think good things, or like your best self, is kind of in that uncomfortable space. And he challenged me in a way that was different, because I remember, for instance, one of the songs, which is the last song on the album, Wishing You Better, there weren't as many verses, and Alex kind of was just like, what do you want to say? You have to go there, you know, this is a very vulnerable song. And he was basically pushing me to write another verse and to really think about it. And he just left the studio. And it was almost like really interesting, because I've never really had that experience before. But he challenged me in a good way. He was like, this is great, but I want you to push further. I want you to be more vulnerable. I want it to be more raw. And it was like that for lots of the songs. So Wishing You Better, also To The Brink, we wrote a brand new chorus together in the studio. The chorus that is in the actual song wasn't there when I had it as a demo. So he challenged me in a really, really good way to just push further. And it's those extra little nudges that I think is really important when making an album. So yeah, I really enjoyed working with him.
That's amazing. Like, I love hearing that. And I, like, again, that collaboration aspect is so present. And, you know, if you allow me, can I sound super basic real quick?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to run the risk of doing it because, like, I would have to say my favorite song of that album is Cascades. Like, for me, that's one of those songs that it's like an instant vibe to me. And I fiercely love how everything in the song, and I think this kind of speaks to how you and Alex work together. I feel like everything in that song particularly is there to support your vocal. And I wonder how you feel about that song when you reflect on it.
Cascades is one of the hardest songs to finish. It was really interesting. It was probably the last song I finished on the album. Yeah, it was really challenging because there's so many things that we intentionally, you're so right, that we intentionally did. Like for instance, the middle eight is a few BPM slower than the rest of the track. So there's a sound, that's a soundbite that I had that I took on a train on the way to the studio. Because Alex kept telling me to record stuff at, like around me, and we put certain things in the album. So in Cascades, there's like a soundbite that it sounds almost like a plane kind of flying off, but it was me on the train. I was like, oh, that sounds so cool. So it was really hard. I feel like people don't realize how much, like, how many days of like, this isn't quite right, but what do we do? And Cascades was hard because even though there's lots of stuff going on, it's a balancing act of making sure that it's busy in all the right places sonically, but it has space for my vocal to breathe. So those verses, like, we almost had to be minimal, but like, we had to keep in key moments whilst allowing the vocal and the lyric to come through. So that one was like a very satisfying song to finish.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's something you said within that that I'd love to explore further, because one of my favorite things about talking about music and art is that so many of the aspects of the creation of art and the intake of it allows you to take certain experiences and lessons and correlate them to other aspects of life. You mentioned there how there were so many instances in the creation of that song and others where it was like, oh, like, I don't exactly know what's here, but I keep returning to it. And, you know, if you think about it, it's kind of a nice antidote and counter to this whole aspect of instant gratification. Like, we're going to talk about the cookbook and, you know, you cooking, but that almost kind of speaks to that in a way, an interesting contrast of like how you can have that in one music, one realm in the context of music, then with cooking. And I imagine such a myriad of other places in life as well.
Yeah, I think it's music for me. It's interesting. I find both mediums of creative like processes to be very similar, food and music. It's me telling a story in many ways. But I think with making a record, you have to, it's so strange because the world's a pin, like no one has their ear to it as yet. And so you're trying to figure out something that doesn't exist as yet at the same time. It's like only real to you and the person that you're making it with. So I think, yeah, Cascades, it's a similar thing like with Bloom, Does It Get Easier was the hardest song on the album. It was so hard to finish because I wrote it on guitar. And quite ironically, you know, it wasn't an easy song to make. And then I like spent a day, I told the producer I was working with, I was like, okay, just give me an afternoon. I'm going to try and revoice these chords on guitar, on keys or synth. And in the end, it became this synthy kind of song with like this massive beat. But in the beginning, it wasn't really like that. I wrote it like on guitar. So it's like trying to figure out what's best and what works. Because harmonically, things sound good. Like, you know, if you've written a good song, you can just play it on piano and guitar. But I think the art of production and making an album is figuring out, A, what's best for that song, but also working on something sonically that expresses the song in a way that feels new and fresh to you. So it's like, it's really, yeah, it's really interesting. But I love that thing about music that I never know how, like I have a rough idea of some stuff, like sonically, I have the ideas in my brain, what I want to communicate, but it's really fun to go down a journey with a song and end up with something that is like new and like makes you feel like nervous and excited. And I definitely, every project made me nervous.
But you know what's so trippy in what you just said? I mean, again, it's kind of fascinating how that could be applied to life. Like, I mean, you could kind of apply that to friendships and family and just interactions where, like, you know, it's one of the things I always notice about music and the creation of it is that when you go into the studio a lot of the times, when you're working on a project, you're not the same person you are after you leave it. And if I think about certain conversations and like friendships and interactions you could have with people, it's interesting how the older we get, the more we have to allow ourselves to be changed by the passage of time. It's almost a difficult thing to kind of comprehend.
Yeah. And that's what I love about music. Like, I don't know what, I know I'll make music forever, but I don't know who I'll be. I don't know, like, I don't know who I'm going to be in 20 years time. So there's something that's really lovely that for me, and what's important is always to make the best thing I can in that moment that represents myself. And that's also, again, studio, I get so much joy from making an album because of that. Because for me, that is the purity of like that artistic role. Like, it's me and the music, it's me and my voice, it's me being vulnerable before anyone else is allowed in. And it's interesting, this new writing, I've become a lot more insular about it because, mainly because I started writing the album in lockdown. And so I was just writing on my own. And I know lots of people that did, you know, sessions with like people on Zoom. And I was like, I don't really fancy doing that. And so I just had that thing where I just, you know, woke up every day and just wrote and just made stuff that, you know, felt me. And I love that relationship between me and the process.
That's incredible. I love hearing that. And, you know, I wanted to ask you one more thing about Modern Dread. And funnily, it, like while we were talking just there a few seconds ago, my dog kind of came in the background. And it's quite serendipitous because that weirdly ties into what I wanted to ask you about. So I love art, especially cover art and photo, like art direction and photography. And would I be right in thinking in the correlation of the art direction and some of the sonic palette was inspired by Missy Elliott in any way?
Maybe subconsciously. She, for me, was like a visionary, like ahead of her time. Like, even now I see a lot of artists like Rue Runway, like reference her like visually. So maybe subconsciously, I think you could totally be right in the music video for Cascades. I think I wanted to, because I guess Modern Dread to me is this like anxiousness that I feel about kind of the modern way of living where, you know, there's a war outside and you have to keep going and you live with this anxiety and you kind of have to put it on hold whilst you email. Like, yeah. It's this life that we live that feels quite dystopian because it's like the world is on fire, like there's global warming is happening, but then also the world is also still spinning. And so I wanted to create this world, I guess visually, that had that kind of dystopian-esque vibe to it. So I was wearing lots of really interesting fashion designers, and I love that whole part of music as well, is like the visual side of it. So I loved wearing like Robert One. I feel like his clothing to me has this like elegant futuristic vibe, and I just got really obsessed with his clothing. I wore him a lot. And I worked with an amazing stylist, his name's Joel. And it was really fun to actually dig into that and try lots of new things. And we were really creative. So yeah, maybe there's an element, I think subconsciously, I think you could totally be right, because she is one of my favorite visual artists, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like I need to add further context for people so they're not gonna be like, what does a dog have to do with it? My dog's name is Missy and she's named after Missy Elliott. So.
Stop it! You know what's so funny? On the way, like earlier today, I saw a cat and I was thinking, I feel like if I had a cat, I would name it Missy after Missy Elliott. Like genuinely today, that's what I thought I had. I was like, oh, I'd name it Missy after Missy Elliott.
That's amazing. Well, you know what? You had that as original thought. If you do that, I won't think you harped on me. It's all good. Another big thing we have to discuss, and I'm really, really fucking excited that we get to talk about this, is Plentiful, your first cookbook.
Yes, my cookbook.
Man, the book features vegan Jamaican recipes, which is personal in essence, but the book is very much that to a T, deeply personal. And I saw on socials, like how you were talking about it, how the main hope for the book was to have people feel as though they were visitors to your home, right?
Yeah, I think Dee's Table in general, like when I even thought of the name, it's like me inviting strangers to my table, just everyone to my table, introduce them to my world and memories through food. And when I first started, I was in these supper clubs and all the dishes was like ode to, you know, Devon House ice cream, like all of these memories that I have that are really vivid to me that I am channeling through the dishes that I create. And so plentiful, you know, I spent the last year and a half, or the year and a half, maybe 2 years, kind of dreaming of this book and what it would be. And it was so fun to create. I really enjoyed writing it. There's also a lot of my film photography in Jamaica from my last visit last year. Memories in food is really interesting. And I'm really fascinated in creating moments in food. And so I love to host dinners in like art galleries and bring in like these kind of elements or like stories on the table. So it's all about inviting people into my world.
Yeah. You know, in regards to that, and, you know, in the general context of the book itself, I don't think I'll be the first to note this, but having a book of vegan Jamaican recipes particularly doesn't sound like the most obvious idea in the world, but it's one of those I see executed and I think, wow, talk about something that's very much needed. And I wonder, is that how it felt for you, where it was like, okay, let me show the world that there's a healthy way that these dishes can exist while still retaining the very essence that makes them Jamaican?
Yeah, I think it's important to write our stories, to write. And I think there's an exciting moment in publishing at the moment where I'm seeing so many authors like Riaz Phillips. He has two books, East Winds and West Winds, that's come out. He's also Jamaican. It's not a vegan book, but there's loads of vegan recipes in his books. And he dives deep into kind of history across the Caribbean islands and food and like the recipes that, you know, he had visiting, but also from his upbringing, and like Melissa Thompson. And there's all these incredible authors that are telling their story. I think it's really important for us to write these recipes. And so for me, as a vegan, you know, Jamaican, I was like, I need to make a book that I would want to buy and that I would want to see on the shelves. And when I first went vegan in 2015, which is so weird, I went vegan just after that trip in New York.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. maybe wow. Like a week after. Like at that time, 2015, I feel like I didn't see the books I wanted to cook from. I didn't see the restaurants that I wanted to eat, like the food I wanted from that vegan Jamaican perspective. So I was like, okay, I have to do it myself. Like, and I think it's really important in that respect. For me, it was really important for me to be able to tell that story in an authentic way.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, and it's really great that you've done this, because even though it's a very personal thing, I mean, what I'm about to point out isn't a personal thing in itself, but I think the personal nature of where this book came from for you, coinciding where nutrition and the accessibility of it is going along the same plane. Because I think right now we're seeing it now. You brought up like how it started for you in 2015. It's interesting to think 2015 versus now, that vegan food, vegan restaurants, vegan produce to buy at markets is becoming more accessible year after year. I'm not vegan myself, but I will say I slowly and steadily have been incorporating more like vegan dishes within my diet just by the nature of like how good it is and how accessible it is. And I give it a couple years where I feel like nowadays you still kind of hear the conversation of people where they feel the transition is so jarring, but I feel year after year after year, it's getting less and less difficult, you know?
Yeah, I think it's been really exciting to see that change, especially in restaurant culture, because for a long time, you know, I'd go out with my friends and go to a restaurant and we'll make some kind of meal from all the sides or something. And I think in London, like, or most cities now, like, it's so exciting because even some of the best restaurants in the country, like Follow, which is like this, you know, this restaurant that's received super high praise, they have loads of vegan options using plants, using vegetables as the star of the show. And vegetables are really exciting to cook from. And that's something that I try to emphasize in Plentiful in my book, using vegetables with those spices from home, and cooking them at their best, you know, not just like boiling them or overcooking them, and like treating them with care and love. And I've noticed a big shift in the effort in restaurant culture to create vegan dishes, plant-based dishes that are super delicious on menus, which is really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And we're so I'm in New York, and particularly it's happening in Manhattan as well, but especially in Brooklyn, where there's kind of this big movement of trying to not just make vegan dining accessible, but also, how do I say it? Like whatever the opposite of high end is, but that middle ground, like kind of more like, you know, in terms of to go and more like sit down, very making it more casual. Yeah, there's like kind of this movement of making vegan food and vegan dining quite a casual affair. And it's kind of interesting seeing that, because I think there's a spot in Brooklyn, if I'm remembering correctly, I think it's Bushwick, it's called Heartbreakers, and that place is awesome. Like, they have, like, various, like, it's almost like kind of fusion dishes, kind of vegan-ish, Caribbean-ish, but, you know, vegan stuff. And that place, it's almost like kind of like a burger joint, but it's not. And seeing little places like that open up has been really cool over the years.
Sick. Yeah, I've really enjoyed watching how food world has changed, especially the chefs behind the restaurants, the voices behind the food. Also, fine dining feels very, like, not necessarily outdated, but I feel like it's lost its glamour. And, like, for me, it's not very interesting to create a menu that is, like, so inaccessible and unaffordable for literally anyone. And I think that space is very, I can't really relate to that extreme fine dining kind of space. But I do also, so I think these new kind of wave of chefs, so exciting. It's like, I guess everyone's telling their story in a way that's authentic to them. And it's so interesting, authenticity and what that means, because I guess authenticity is defined by you. And it's like, you, even just me personally, you know, I was born in Jamaica, I moved here when I was 9. I've traveled so much. I'm like, I have this nostalgia of my childhood in Jamaica and the food that I ate growing up. But I've, you know, I lean on so many different techniques from different cultures. And I would say that I am obsessed with food. So I'm always going out to new places, trying new food. I'm constantly inspired by the things that I taste and see, and old techniques, and like reading about recipes and like trying new things. And so I feel like the food that I make, there's a fusion element. It's not the most authentic Jamaican dishes, but it comes from an authentic place to me. So I'm excited to see these kind of new waves of chefs that are in a similar, you know, headspace, where they're kind of twisting things on their heads. Like over here, there's even like just fun bakeries that I'm like really into. There's a bakery here called Toad, and they do like a cornbread croissant, and like they're taking, you know, being like that kind of skill of like a croissant and pastry making and doing something new and exciting. And I think that's what I'm interested in. I want to do like the new next thing, which isn't that dissimilar from how I think about music.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how it comes all together. Okay, so naturally, right, the idea is for someone to get the book, open it up, and go from start to finish, like similar like to an album. That's always the ideal. So I'm going to do something that's good. I'm going to ask you a question that's going to annoy you, but I'm going to add a lot of context. Because tell me this, right? Considering how someone listening might feel, I've noticed this over the years with people. Sometimes people feel intimidated by cookbooks. I don't know what it is. So even in doing so from the author's mouth, what's a dish on the in the book that you think someone should try first? And I'll paint the scene. The person I have in mind is someone who's worked like a 50, 60 hour week, is blowing off hanging out with their friends to be at home for the weekend. They don't want to eat the same old things. What's the dish you recommend that they make for themselves?
Weirdly, I would say the first breakfast recipe in the book.
Actually?
Yeah, it was...
So was it made intentionally in that way? Like the from the recipes consecutively, like not difficulty, but it's like if you're like a beginner intermediate cook, the very first and then onwards, it gets like more tricky in that.
Not really, no. I think it's told in a way that kind of structurally makes sense to me. The chapters are very specific to like how I eat food. Or so the first chapter is called Food I Dream About Before Going to Bed. And the first recipe is a French toast recipe, which for me is just like my favorite recipe in the book. And it was the first recipe I developed for the book. So I feel like that's a good place to start because that's kind of where it all started.
Oh, okay. That is quite accessible on that, you know. And, you know, maybe this is a hot take, but I think you could have French toast at any time of the day. It's not just a morning thing.
Yeah, I hard agree.
Yeah. I'm saying this here to echo something that I'm sure will be in the intro to this, but I highly recommend that people follow your cooking page, D's Table. Well, D's underscore table. And yeah. It's funny because it's been brought up in the series how I can kind of rail against social media. Like, I'm one of those people that will go like, oh, social media is annoying. But the flip side to that is that there are a few pages that I follow and love. And I have to say that this is one of them.
That's very kind of you. Yeah, I think it's really important to me to tell my story. And I think that's what makes social media, that's why social media has had such a massive impact, because so many people have been able to tell their stories in a way that they might not have been. And like, it's accessible to everyone. So I think it's interesting. Like, I advertised my first supper club in 2017 on Instagram, not knowing who was going to come, never done it before. And yeah, so I think lots of people just found it on Instagram. There was an organic kind of search. And so, yeah, I think it's like, for me, I love being able to share the newest things that I'm working on with my community. There's something really nice about that element of Instagram.
Yeah, I definitely hard agree as well. You know, something I'm really curious about to know, what would you say surprised you the most about the process of putting this book together? Because I think for some people listening, and I'll include myself in this actually, I don't think I know anything about how a cookbook comes together, and I'm sure most people don't. Like, for example, when you're making an album, at this point the starting points have been somewhat similar in terms of like other people have made albums, other albums you yourself have made. I imagine when respectfully when making the cookbook, it must have felt so new, like a whole new world for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I literally was doing it for the first time. So I was figuring that out in real time. And because the only thing that was important for me was to make something that felt authentic to myself, which is why I think all the chapters are very me, and the way that I write in it is very conversational, because I wanted people to feel as though I was simply talking them through the recipes myself. I guess the surprising part might just be how long it takes. Very long. Long process. Yeah, just anything in print in general, it takes a long time. But I had a lot of fun designing it, and you can see that in the book. There's like lots of colors. I wanted this really bright, vibrant cookbook with filmed photos, and like so it was really fun to create all those little kind of parts of it, even down to font. Like, everything is so intentional and plentiful. So yeah, I think like people would probably be surprised with how long it takes. It takes a long time.
Yeah, and obviously there's editors and, you know, proofreaders and all that. But would you say the nature of the book coming together, there's like a collaborative aspect that maybe you didn't expect, or was like maybe a bit more involved than you probably thought initially? Like, is that how it is as well?
I guess so. But I feel like it is genuinely similar to any creative projects, like making a record. You know, you're only as good as the team around you that can capture what you have in your mind and bring it to life. And I'm really grateful to have had such an incredible team, from a photographer to food stylist to editor. I feel like the designer of the book, they were such a massive help. I couldn't have done it all on my own. And the idea is definitely the start. But I think having a team around you that kind of works towards something is like really wonderful part of any project. Yeah, I feel like I learned a lot doing it, for sure. But it's really fun. I just really loved seeing it come together. And then when you like get the book, it's like, it got so, when I got the book, it felt so real to me.
Yeah. There's a photo on your Instagram of it. Like, I'm going to set the scene a little bit. I don't remember what bookshop it is, but it's a photo of the book stood amongst some other books from the window of a bookshop, from like the outside looking in. And I mean, I know we're having a chat, so there's an incentive to just kind of like, you know, hype you up. But I do have to say, seeing that photo is really lovely, kind of feeling like the idea, if I would have been physically walking past that bookshop and seeing the coloring pop, my brain might be like, oh, what is that? Out of curiosity, wanting to pick up. It must be nice knowing that, like, you might have had that as a hope, and realistically, that's probably happened a few times.
Yeah, it still blows my mind. Like, it's such an interesting but rewarding thing. I think books in general, like, you know, I've got so many cookbooks that I love and like to flick through, and it's nice to know that this lives in people's homes. And whenever I do see it in the wild and unexpectedly, it definitely still like blows my mind. So yeah, it's one of the craziest feelings, I think. Like, I can't really describe it.
I want to jump back to music for a sec before we finish off, because, you know, going back to Modern Dread for a sec, I feel like the best thing about that album is that it reminded me about how creating something can have this feeling where you're blowing the hinges off a door, where I feel like that was like such a turning point for you, where it was like, man, you know, I can go these routes. I can try these different things. So you had that experience. You had the experience of D's Table. You had the experience of the cookbook. You have these things now. What ways do you feel like this is influencing the music you're working on now? Because speaking to what we talked about earlier, you're such a different person now than even 2019, 2020, you know?
I think the music's just gotten a lot more insular. I find it really fascinating how in music, I guess you can't really hide. You literally can't hide. You go in a vocal booth and it will pick up your breath, and like, you then in that moment, you, when you're singing, like, you can't run away from who you are in that present moment. And so I guess when I was making Elsewhere, like, I think my voice sounds like there's a darkness to my voice, and I think that represents that headspace that I was in, where I felt like I was literally elsewhere. And Bloom, I think I have this kind of writer like kind of vocal, and I think it's because, you know, that's a song about, that record is about me coming back into myself and like womanhood. And on Dread, I had the most fun singing, and I think you can hear it. I think my vocals are very confident, and I think it's interesting. But weirdly enough, because of the pandemic, writing at home, like not touring, I started to just sing a lot quieter, just naturally, because I'm like, I don't know, I'm very aware of everyone around me. Like, I had a little studio set up at my house that I'm like, I don't want to disturb everyone around me. So I think I was kind of digging deeper, being a bit more insular. I think my vocals also show that insular part of me. So yeah, I'm in the thick of it. I'm like, I've been writing in different waves. So I'm just like I said, being in the studio is my favorite thing. It's the favorite part of the project moment for me, because it means I get to really push myself. And it's really just me, like, at the end of the day, like, that's the exciting venture. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see where this ends. I've got a few, like, I'm also in that headspace where I wake up and something new comes to me, like a visual reference or like something. And that's when I know I'm like really ready.
Do you know what? This is like a bit of an aside. It kind of ties to this, but I think it speaks to also how eclectic your music has been thus far. A couple months ago, I saw Janelle Monáe touring for The Age of Pleasure, and you know, one of my favorite artists of all time, and seen her live many times. And I was at the show, and I was like, "Oh fuck, I think fucking Danae would be amazing opening for this tour. Like, it would have been a great
love that record so much. You sound so free, like, love it so much." Like I said, I think it's so wonderful. I'm a fan of music too. And that's something that I spend a lot of time. I'm returning to a lot of my favorite records right now. Returning to a lot of Feist. Like The Reminder was actually my first album that I bought on iTunes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was the first record I bought on iTunes. That and like a Bon Iver EP, whichever one had. Is it called like Blood Banks or something?
Yeah, I think
EP.
So.
It was an EP.
It's Blood something.
Yeah. And that record, The Reminder, has like such, like, it had a massive impact on me. So I'm returning to my favorite records. So yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting process, but I guess in the studio, I feel like I can be my best self, or I can try new things. I can make mistakes. I can be honest. I can be raw. I could say what I want to express that I find hard to maybe communicate in other kind of avenues. I'm excited. I'm also just trying not to like give so much away, because I guess I'm still in this process right now.
Well, yeah, because by the nature of creativity, you could say something that will no longer be relevant to you like 2-3 months from now.
Yeah.
Or something like.
I mean, I was just thinking, even with, for instance, with Dread, just thinking about Cascades again. Cascades, I wrote very late on in the process. That always happens with records. Like, you write this one song that comes like a month before, like, you know, in the middle of mixing, and then you make it and you're like, whoa, this could be an important song on the album. And I find that fascinating. Like, who knows what I'll write in a couple months' time? Like, I might write something that will be so important to the trajectory of this album. So I guess it's just about being open to that.
No, massively. And, you know, in relation to that, and I'm glad we were at the tail. Like, I'm glad we brought up Modern Dread again, because before we end, I just thought to myself something I'd like to give you the opportunity to do. Because, you know, we talk so much about the album in this talk. I'm thinking naturally someone will want to go and listen to it. Obviously, again, start to finish is the ideal. But when you reflect on the project as a whole, is there a song off that album that has grown into quite a favorite of yours, or a song you would like to see get some extra love from the world that you think people should give a listen to?
I think Grapefruit on the Porch will forever be my fave, or Hail. I think those two, Grapefruit and Hail, are like my two faves.
Super solid. Any particular reasons as to why? Or I feel like I know why, but I'd love to hear you say it.
I just feel, that's really tricky. I always think it's fascinating, like, my favorites on the record always change. Like, if you asked me at the time that I made the album, I might have said Offer Me. I think prospectively, Hail is one of those songs that I really feel still to this day right now. That kind of internal battle and feeling like really like just struggling, I guess, in a way that feels quite human and raw. I think I write about from that place quite a lot. So I think it's just a song that I still feel like is relevant to what I'm going through right now. So I'd say Hail for that reason.
Okay, I like it. My interpretation was like both of those songs, they kind of go like, look at you being that, where it's like, oh, look what I could fucking do, like, creatively.
Yeah, I mean, Hail has so many complex kind of things sonically, but I think, yeah, it's just a song that I write from that place quite a lot, like this kind of vulnerable kind of space. I think vulnerability is like really beautiful, and it's not something that I shy away from. And you know, that's why making music for me feels like it's a lot. It takes a lot out of me. But I'm very proud of the record in general, but I think right now I'd say Hail. I actually haven't heard it in a long time. I haven't listened to Dread in a long time. So I'm like, huh.
You might do this after this talk.
Maybe.
Like, is this? Today, thank you. I'm really glad we got to do this. And like, I always get jealous at people, because in the context of this, I know there's probably a couple people listening, a good amount of people listening who haven't heard your music before. And I always get jealous of those people who get to hear your stuff for the first time.
Oh, man. Like, yeah, I think it's so rewarding, because sometimes I forget. I think as an artist, you are like continuously just existing, like as everyone does. And there's something so wonderful in how universal these feelings are, because it's like, thank God I'm not suffering alone. And it feels really good to know that I can give something to the world that can be felt, you know, and where people can be seen, hopefully.